Please come to order on the 93rd legislative day. Will the members please vote to signify their presence?
The roll shows 17 members present this morning, Mr. President.
Please stand for the invocation by today's chaplain, Bishop Michael Kenny, Roman Catholic Church, Diocese of Juneau.
O Lord God, to the people of the covenant, this is a holy day. Our Jewish brothers and sisters celebrate Passover. For over 3,000 years, this people has commemorated that night you freed their ancestors from the slavery of Egypt. For much of that time, they have continued to suffer persecution and oppression, discrimination and violence. Still, they have remained faithful to their traditions. How appropriate for us today to pray not only for this chosen people, but for all who still yearn to be free, for political prisoners and their captors, for those enslaved by addictions, for those shackled by ignorance or their own conceits, for those in the grip of poverty or possessions, for those bound by lies or half-truths, for ourselves and whatever may hold us in bondage. Help us to realize that none of us is free until all of us are free. There is no true justice until there is justice for all. May we work together with all peoples for that liberation which alone can bring our race. Shalom. Amen.
Will Senator Rohde please lead us in the pledge this morning?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Senator Rohde?
I move that the unanimous consent that the prayer be spread upon the journal.
Without objection, the prayer be spread upon the journal. Would the Secretary please certify the journal?
I wish to certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 92nd legislative day.
Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I move that the unanimous consent that the journal be approved as certified.
Without objection, the journal is approved as certified. Introduction of guests. Senator Duncan.
President, in the far gallery, before they have to leave, I'd like to introduce a civics class from Juneau Douglas High School. There's, I think, 8 students, and the teacher's there, Jim Carroll.
Senator Coghill.
Mr. President, it gives me great pleasure to introduce 2 groups that are in the gallery, one in the Miller Gallery, one in the Ziegler Gallery. Today is cold day, as you well know. We've got the reception tonight with Iusevelli's putting on a reception, and these folks will be there, but in the Ziegler Gallery, I have 3 gentlemen that are with that group, one from Stone and Webster Engineering Company, Stanley Lux. Stanley, welcome to the Senate. From the Joy Technology, Scott Adair, and also with the TRW Combustion, Savar Ubankar. Welcome to the Senate. And in the far gallery, Mr. President, in the Miller Gallery, I have an old friend of all of us who is the president of Alaska International Marketing now, Don Kubley. Don, welcome to the Senate. And with him is Mr. Terry Bricks, who is the president of Technology International Exchange. Welcome to the Senate, sir.
Senator Frank.
Thank you, Mr. President. In Senator Ziegler's gallery is a constituent of both mine and Betty's with the University Physics Department, at the head of the Department of Physics, John Morak. Please help me welcome John.
Senator Elias.
Mr. President, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to once again introduce to this body the students from Blatchon Middle School in Sitka. This is, I believe, the 17th time their teacher, Mr. Harvey Brand, has brought him to Juneau for the to attend the sessions. I don't have all their names. I have all their names, but I'm not sure which ones are present. But would you students from Blatchley Middle School please stand up? And Harvey Brandt, the teacher's back here.
Further introduction, Senator Sedmansky.
Thank you. On behalf of Senator Katula and I, it's my pleasure to introduce some folks part of the ARCO CAP. I'll ask them to stand and we'll introduce them all in one group. We've got a couple, Barbara and Ray Albee, Joe Green, James Ivis, Joyce Morrison, Dale Allen, Dana Swank, and David Newman. Welcome.
Further introductions, messages from the governor.
There are no messages this morning, Mr. President.
Messages from the House.
The House has passed committee substitute for House Bill number 300, Judiciary, amended by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to acquisition and ownership of capital stock of a public utility by a political subdivision, relating to certain property records maintained by public utilities and including the customers of a public utility that has an annual compensation in excess of $50,000, the definition of public, for public utility regulation.
Community Regional Affairs, Labor and Commerce.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 478, CNRA, by the Community Regional Affairs Committee, an act relating to solid and hazardous waste management.
Community Regional Affairs, Finance.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 508, HESS, by the Health, Education, Social Services Committee, an act relating to pharmacies located outside of the state.
HESS Committee, Labor and Commerce.
This bill is available for cross-sponsorship. House Bill number 576 by the Community Regional Affairs Committee, an act relating to provision of fire protection service by a committee outside its boundaries.
It has a companion Senate bill that's gone through the system. It is now in the Finance Committee. I'll refer that to Finance.
Those are all the bills this morning, Mr. President.
Communications?
There are no communications.
Reports of standing committees.
State Affairs Committee considered Senate Concurrent Resolution number 54 relating to the promotion of Assistant Adjutant General Louis Lee Lucas to Brigadier General in the Alaska National Guard and reports it back as follows. Senator Pershaw, Chair, and Senator Fake signed no recommendation. Senator Kelly signed due pass, zero physical note attached. Senate Concurrent Resolution number 54 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The State Affairs Committee considered Senate Bill 342 re-enlistment bonus for members of the Alaska National Guard and Alaska Naval Militia and reports it back as follows. Senator Pershaw, Chair, and Senator Kelly signed due pass. Senator Fake signed no recommendation. Zero fiscal note attached. Senate Bill 342 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
Finance Committee considered Senate Bill 346, public notice regarding the value of permanent fund dividends effective date, and recommends the State Affairs CS be adopted and due pass. Report was signed by Senators Binkley Newland, co-chairs, concurring Senators Duncan, Fisher, Jaroff, Pearson, Frank. Previous fiscal note and zero fiscal note attached. Senate Bill 346 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
Resources Committee considered Senate Bill 472 authorizing moose farming, and majority of the committee recommends due pass. The report was signed by Senator Fahrenkamp, Chair, concurring Senators Frank, Jaroff, and Strzelczewski. Zero fiscal note attached. Senate Bill number 472 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. Transportation Committee considered Senate Bill 483 relating to golf carts, and majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for Senate Bill 483 Transportation, new title and be passed. Report was signed by Senator Jones, Chair, concurring Senators Pershaw and Coghill. Senator Fisher signed no recommendation. Fiscal note attached. Senate Bill 483 has no further referral.
Rules Committee. You did pick up a fiscal note. Finance Committee.
Labor and Commerce Committee considered Senate Bill 514, exemption from regulation by the Alaska Public Utilities Commission, recommends, and a majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for Senate Bill 514, Labor and Commerce, and due pass. Report was signed by Senator Elias and Chair concurring, Senators Coghill and Rohde. Senator Fake signed do not pass, fiscal note attached. Senate Bill 514 has a further referral to the Finance Committee.
Senator Duncan.
Fair.
General Sanities. Back to order. Senator Pershaw.
Mr. President, I wonder if we might return to introduction of guests.
Without objection, revert to introduction of guests. Senator Pershaw.
Senator Yulee and I have a noteworthy constituent of ours in the Ziegler Gallery, Jane Anvik, who's the
Assistant Commissioner of Commerce, and with her is Mr. Abe, who's Alaska's tourism representative in Japan. Welcome.
That returns us to standing committee reports.
Labor and Commerce Committee considered Senate Bill 542, including employment of officials at certain amateur sports events for coverage under the Employment Security Act. The majority of the committee recommends do pass. The report was signed by Senator Elias and Chair, concurring Senators Coghill, Fakes, and Rohde. Zero fiscal and attached. Senate Bill 542 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. Resources Committee considered committee substitute for sponsor, substitute for House Bill 332, Finance Title Amended, establishing the Good News Bay Critical Habitat Area, recommends be replaced with Senate CS for sponsor, substitute for House Bill 332 Resources, and reports it back as follows. Senator Fahrenkamp, Chair, and Senator Elias signed due pass. Senator Strzelewski, Frank, and Jaroff signed no recommendation. Fiscal note and zero fiscal unattached. House Bill 332 has no further referral.
I did pick up the fiscal note. We'll send it to the Finance Committee.
Labor and Commerce Committee considered House Bill 404, Unemployment Insurance Benefit Schedule, effective date. The majority of the committee recommends do pass. The report was signed by Senator Elias and Chair concurring, Senators Coghill and Rohde. Senator Fake signed do not pass. Previous House fiscal note. House Bill 404 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. State Affairs Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill 493, Labor and Commerce, relating to reemployment rights for members of the state's organized militia, and reports it back as follows. Senator Pershote, Chair, and Senator Fake signed no recommendation. Senator Kelly signed due pass. Previous House zero fiscal note. Committee substitute for House Bill 493, Labor and Commerce, has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
Rules Committee considered Senate Bill 119 relating to required reporting methods for corporate income tax owed by members of an affiliated group whose common parent is a corporation incorporated outside the United States. And Senate Bill 230, Compensation of Justices and Judges, recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Strzelewski, Chair, concurring Senators Kelly and Eliason. These two bills appear on today's calendar. The Rules Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill 442, Labor and Commerce amended, Alaska Tourism Marketing Council, and recommends calendar. The report was signed by Senator Strzelewski, Chair, concurring Senators Rohde, Curtillo, and Eliason. This bill does appear on today's calendar. And those are all the standing committee reports this morning, Mr. President.
Reports of special committees.
There are no special committee reports.
Introduction of Senate resolutions.
There are no Senate resolutions.
Introduction of Senate bills.
There are no Senate bills.
Would the Secretary please note the presence in the chambers of Senator Fakes and Porchot? That brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Senator Curtillo.
President, I ask that we take up the reconsideration of House Bill 74 at this time.
We have in front of us in third reading House Bill 74, Senator Halford.
Could we have an ease, please?
Senate will stand at ease. Back to order. We have in front of us committee substitute for House Bill number 74, Finance.
Question.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I must conclude that I made an error yesterday in voting for this bill, and I'm going to vote against it. There are several problems I wasn't aware of. The cost of funds to purchase the building is higher now than it was when the bill was introduced and the fiscal note was done. Secondly, this building will be taken off the local tax rolls, and the reason we didn't hear anything from the City of Seward is, of course, because they have to go to the state here very shortly to get an extension on the financing for the prison down there, so it's there's no wonder that they were required to remain silent. The operating costs aren't on the fiscal note, and that is what will increase with the action that we're taking, and I think that this should be required to be on the fiscal note. It would be much less attractive. In fact, I think the primary reason for the proposal is probably the bond arbitragers who will make most of the money off this process.
Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. President. If you look in the packet, you'll see that the building could be bought for $4.7 million. You'll also see that there's some discussion as to what the actual annual payment will be, but even at the bond rate that was shown in the original fiscal note, it's over $700,000 a year to pay this building off if we finance it and pay $6 million for it. Right now, you know, that shows a savings from $800,000. But the fact is that if we put this in the capital budget where it belongs, avoid going around the vote of the people, we can save $700,000 or $800,000 in each of the next 10 years operating budgets. That's the kind of capital expenditures we ought to be looking for, instead of the kind of things I'm seeing circulated on sheets all around this building.
Senator Strzelewski.
Yes, Mr. President. If the fiscal note is inappropriate, then we should request an appropriate fiscal note. As the good senator from Eagle River says, if we pay cash for this, we don't get into the issue, and that certainly is an option to do it. But what we're dealing with, and I think all of us went back and took an additional look at this, I certainly did, there were bonds sold by the developers here, revenue bonds, and it's arguable as to whether that's appropriate or not. That has not been settled in the courts, but the issue is that those bonds have been sold. The interest rates were high. Interest rates have gone down. And so what we're looking at here is the state exercising their option to reduce costs by going out with tax-exempt bonds in order to purchase this facility. And so if I were the developer, I'd probably be unhappy to see this legislation go through, because it means they're not going to get their full return on it. But the state does have that option. I think this makes good sense. That doesn't forestall the legislature from acting to decide to go ahead and buy the building. So I think this is a good thing. If the Finance Committee has made an error in their fiscal note and there's new information, then we should be provided with that.
Senator Ewing.
We have a brief please.
Senator will stand at ease.
Thank you, Mr. President. I spoke earlier at ease with Milt Barker in the Department of Revenue, and he's told me that the reason the fiscal note didn't contain any additional monies for maintenance is that they were basically incalculable. They were thought to be insignificant, and therefore they did not include them. I might note that this bill is just permissive, that it does not require the state to buy or exercise their option. It leaves them the option of exercising the option, and if interest rates are such at the option opportunity every year, which comes once a year, they can exercise that option. It doesn't mandate that they do. Also, back on the maintenance for a minute, the state does now currently do routine maintenance. And the only kind of maintenance that would be necessary is maintenance of a major type in the future, such as replacing floor coverings or something like that, according to the people over there in the department. So, I see this bill as an opportunity for the state to save money. We have passed the threshold on the constitutional question several years ago, and we shouldn't not save money now just on the basis of some constitutional question that we already decided a few years ago. We can also, even if we do pass this bill, if we choose to put money in the budget, and that might be a good idea to go ahead and fund it, but I don't think killing this bill will increase the likelihood that we'll put the money in the capital budget. So I recommend a yes vote.
Senator Curtula.
I wish to support the position of the previous speaker, and as a legislator representing Seward, let me tell you they have a very competent lobby. They're down here often themselves, and I have communication from them on a continuing basis, and they have never come out in opposition to this approach. I think they too recognize the state should do what it can to save money where it can. I support this legislation.
Further discussion, Senator Halford.
Of course, when you take $5 million off the tax rolls in a small community, everybody else pays for it. So everybody in Seward will pay a little bit because we put this into public ownership, out of private ownership. That's one small part of it. But the other part is just look at the numbers using either set of projections. It's either $721,000 a year or $809,000 a year to avoid facing up to the right way to fix the problem. And the right way to fix the problem is somewhere in your $450 million of capital that you're now talking about, you find $4.7 million to do something positive to the operating budget instead of a lot of the negatives that you're going to end up doing to the operating budget.
Further discussion. Senator Frank.
Thank you. I would just pass the note to answer the question on the tax roll. It, according to the Department Administration, is not currently on Seward's tax roll, so it wouldn't have an impact, negative impact on the city of Seward.
Further discussion? Senator Jones.
President, may we return to the introduction of guests?
Without objection, Senator Jones.
In Senator Ziegler's gallery, we have with us today Mary Frances. She's the superintendent of schools in Wrangell. Welcome, Mary.
Further discussion on House Bill 74. Question being, shall committee substitute for House Bill 74 Finance pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary record the vote, and so committee substitute for House Bill 74 Finance passed the Senate by a vote of 11 yeas and 8 nays. Senator Rohde, we're going to need a vote on the effective date.
Mr. President, I would move the effective date.
Question being, shall the effective date pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary record the vote, so the effective date on House Bill 74 does pass by a vote of 19 yeas and no nays. Madam Secretary.
Senate Bill 119 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to required reporting methods for corporate income taxes owed by members of an affiliate group whose common parent is a corporation incorporated outside the United States and providing for an effective date. Special Committee on International Trade and Tourism considered the bill and reports it back as follows. Senator Szymanski signed do pass. Senator Jaroff, Halford, and Sturgis, excuse me, Senator Jaroff and Sturgis-Lewski signed no recommendation. Senator Halford signed do not pass yet. Zero fiscal note and fiscal note attached. Judiciary Committee considered the bill and majority of the committee reports it back with no recommendation. Report was signed by Senator Fakes chair, concurring Senators Pierce, Rohde, and Halford. Senator Szymanski signed do pass. Previous zero fiscal note and fiscal note. Resources Committee considered the bill and reports it back as follows. Senator Fehrenkamp, Chair, and Senator Sturgis-Lewski signed do pass. Senator Eliason and Senator Frank signed no recommendation. Senator Curtula and Senator Halford signed do not pass. Letter of intent attached, previous fiscal notes. Finance Committee considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with Finance Committee substitute and reports it back as follows. Senator Uhlenko, Chair, signed do pass. Senators Duncan, Jaroff, Pearson, Fisher, excuse me, Frank signed no recommendation. Fiscal note and zero fiscal note attached. Rules Committee considered the bill recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Sturgis-Lewski Chair, concurring Senators Kelly and Eliason as a Finance Committee substitute.
Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move an unanimous consent that Senate Bill 119 Finance be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance Committee substitute is adopted.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 119 Finance by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the water's edge method of calculating income taxes for certain corporations other than corporations engaged in the production of oil or gas from a lease or property in the state or in the transportation of oil or gas by regulated pipeline in the state and providing for an effective date.
Are there any amendments?
I have no amendments.
Senator Rohde.
President, move to unanimous consent that Senate Bill 19 be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, and placed for final passage.
Without objection, Senate Bill 19 is in third reading.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 119 Finance, an act relating the water's edge method of calculating income taxes for certain corporations other than corporations engaged in the production of oil or gas from a lease or property in the state or in the transportation of oil or gas by regulated pipeline in the state and providing for an effective date.
Great discussion. Senator Ewing.
Mr. President, I will give a brief presentation or discussion on the bill. Currently, the Department of Revenue requires all multinational corporations doing business in Alaska to include all of their foreign subsidiaries as well as their foreign subsidiaries' income in their tax returns using a method commonly known as worldwide combination. This bill establishes a water's edge method for corporations filing state income tax, in essence, a method that determines Alaska's share of a corporation's taxable income by looking only at the corporation's business operations in the United States. The primary reason for eliminating the worldwide method is that all multinational businesses, both foreign and U.S.-based, view worldwide combination as being an unfair and oppressive method of taxation. All other states in the Union have adopted the worldwide method, and they have amended their laws to permit some form of water's edge reporting. Alaska is the only state remaining that requires worldwide unitary apportionment. The foreign-based companies and the domestic-based companies that have testified on this bill were unanimous in their view that the requiring worldwide unitary sends a very negative message to businesses thinking about making investments in Alaska. The message that Alaska does not want its business.
At a time when we are heavily dependent on the oil industry and also at a time when we are looking at declining Prudhoe Bay production, it seems only prudent to take what steps are necessary to encourage a diversified business community and economic development and essentially get investment in the state and encourage it. There is no question Alaska's annual revenues from the general corporate income tax would be reduced if we adopt a water's edge method. The Department of Revenue has estimated that between $1.5 and $3 million, that's essentially on the fiscal note in your packet. In the large scheme of things and taking the long view, that does not seem too high a price to pay for making Alaska a more attractive place for business, investment, and development. The original version of Senate Bill 119 established the water's edge method only for multinational corporations with foreign parents. Multinational corporations with U.S. parents would still have been required to use the worldwide combination method under that version. The Finance Committee believed it was essential to include the U.S.-based multinationals in any kind of a unitary tax reform bill. So we went ahead and included in that so that we would be evenly handily treating both multinationals and international corporations the same way. It makes no sense to impose different tax treatment on corporations solely on the basis of where the parent corporation happens to be incorporated. For another, we did not want to be placing domestic multinationals at a competitive disadvantage. The committee substitute would extend water's edge reporting to all multinational corporations doing business in Alaska, other than oil and gas production and transportation companies taxed under Alaska Statutes 4320072. The Finance Committee substitute includes many of the provisions that were contained in the original bill. However, the Finance Committee substitute also contains detailed provisions that address the most important elements of a water's edge taxation method, rather than leaving those issues entirely to the discretion of the Department of Revenue. The bill now before the body establishes a very standard water's edge taxing method, one that will provide fair and even-handed treatment to all multinational corporations. As you're probably aware, the bill has been supported by the business community in Alaska, the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, International Chamber of Commerce, and also the Japanese and Korean business community, and the Alaska Miners Association, as well as U.S.-based multinational businesses doing business in Alaska.
Senator Curtula.
I checked with the administration, the spokesman's administration. They no longer have a position on this bill, although they originally had introduced it. But it did not include domestics at the time. And even one of the key and salient points of the administration's position at the time, they would say they would replace the lost revenue through other means. What are the other means that have been brought before us to replace the lost revenue? I, for one, have listened extensively last year on this subject, and I don't think they make a good point, and I'm opposed to this legislation.
Senator Yearling.
Thank you, Mr. President. Basically, of course, that was discussed and debated up in the Finance Committee extensively. If we want to look in the long-range things for the year 2000, and for the future, I think we want to stimulate business in Alaska, try to get more people involved. Obviously, there is a cost to this bill. It's $3 million, according to the Department of Revenue. Of course, that's only an estimate. But in the long view, we want to encourage business and development in Alaska, and we'd be the only state in the nation that wouldn't have adopted this approach.
Senator Halford.
Just a question. Not having heard the debate in the Finance Committee, I wonder why this same logic seems to apply to every other corporation other than corporations dealing in oil and gas. I wonder what the debate was on why the exclusion and why there's a difference in those industries.
Senator Yearling.
Mr. President, basically it was discussed that they were excluded from it basically because they had a totally different tax structure and different kinds of problems associated with it, separate from the other kind of businesses that we're trying to encourage in Alaska.
Further discussion. Senator Duncan.
President, I think the senator from Mat-Su made a good point and one that should be considered. And if you look at the fiscal note on the bill, that's attached. It does show a decrease in revenue of $1 to $3 million for each fiscal year, beginning fiscal year 91 forward. That's an estimate by the Department of Revenue. Anyone could quarrel with that, but there's no doubt that there is a decrease in general fund revenues. I understand the need, or the argument for this, is that that loss in revenues will be offset by an increase in economic activity in the state because of this tax law change. However, as the senator from Matsu indicated, no one was ever able to really give any firm estimate of what that benefit would be, which corporations might locate here, which ones were interested in it, which ones were exploring that possibility, and what this tax law change would come to Alaska. That was never very clearly laid out. There's also another side to the fiscal note that should be looked at, and that's not only do you have a loss in revenue, but you have an increase as far as operating expenditures go each year of $484,000 the first year and $441,000 every year thereafter, because it's going to require more personnel to ensure that this change in tax law is operating correctly, and to require auditors and appeal officers and so on. And I think if we're going to put a change like this into effect, no doubt we're going to have those people on board to do the work. As I listen to the senator from Anchorage talk about this legislation, and I read his handout here, and look at the wide support for water's edge apportionment, at least three of the entities that are supporting it kind of came to my attention here. The interest to supporting it, the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and the Alaska Miners Association. I don't know about the rest of you, but I can recall getting POMs and letters and personal visits from these organizations saying the one thing you got to do is reduce the number of state employees and reduce government operations. I guess, however, in the case where they believe it benefits them, it's okay to add six new employees from here on out, but in the case where it benefits other folks, we can't do that. My message to them is I hope that when they start looking at those types of add-ons and when they start criticizing the legislature for increasing government, they'll keep in mind that they've asked for those increases in a number of areas, that they're there because they believe it's going to benefit their programs, and there's also a lot of people in this state who have other programs who believe that it's necessary to have increased employment or at least stability in employment. I have a hard time when I find organizations coming before this legislature demanding a decrease in government spending and then turning around the next day and demanding an increase for governmental employees and spending, and next year they'll come back and criticize us for putting these six people on board.
Further discussion? Question being, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 119 Finance pass to Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary record the vote. So committee substitute for Senate Bill 119 Finance passed to the Senate by a vote of 14 yeas and 5 nays. Senator Rohde.
Consent the vote on the bill, consider the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the vote on the effective date clause is adopted.
Senate Bill number 230 by the Rules Committee by request for the State Officers Compensation Commission, an act relating to compensation of justices and judges and providing for an effective date. Judiciary Committee considered the bill and majority of the committee reports it back without recommendation. Report was signed by Senator Fakes, Chair, concurring Senators Pearson, Health, and Fiscal Owner attached. Finance Committee considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with the Finance Committee substitute. And reports it back as follows. Senators Binkley and Ewing, co-chair, sign no recommendation. Senators Frank, Jarf, and Pierce sign do pass. Senator Fisher sign do not pass. Now is not the time for such a significant pay raise for an elected position. Rules Committee considered the bill and recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Strzelewski, chair, concurring Senators Elias and Kelly. There's a Finance Committee substitute.
Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask consent that Senate Bill 230 Finance version be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objection? Senate, please stand at ease. There is objection. There is objection. Senate will stand at ease. The Senate committee, adoption of the Senate committee finance substitute. Is there any discussion? Senator Szymanski.
Yeah, I just want to bring to the body's attention that the Finance Committee substitute actually increases what was the original concept of the bill, and it makes it even more repugnant to me that we're going to go ahead and at this stage of the game, when we're asking many state employees and other people to hold back and restrain on wages, we're going to continue to inflate the judge's wages. There are several provisions of this bill which I take exception to, but I particularly take exception to the finances increase that's in here, and we'll talk about the other provisions as we debate the bill.
Further discussion. Senator Yuling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I can give you just a brief discussion on this. This bill came up to the Finance Committee, I guess, about 2 weeks ago, and one of the options on it was to go ahead and adopt the original bill. I happen to support that. However, other members on the committee had more votes than I did on that particular issue, and that's why we have the Finance Committee substitute at the level of compensation of the Salary Commission. That particular amendment failed in the committee. But.
Senator Rohde.
The Finance Committee version is the more preferable version. It adopts the Salary Committee recommendations, which are based on research, not politics. The other version is based on politics. There's ample background research and comparisons that have been done, and I would recommend to the body of the Finance Committee version. Hopefully I have better luck this time than I had last time, though.
Senator Szymanski.
Well, I affectionately call the finance version the $100,000 judge version, because that's basically what you're doing. We've raised it now in excess of $100,000 for Superior Court judges, and if the senator from Spinard, who's so fiscally conservative, believes in holding back spending, at some point in time we have to do that. In a previous measure that was before the body, obviously he felt compelled to do that, and the same philosophy should carry through here. So I just don't see the $100,000 judges giving us better courts, better systems, and particularly when we're in dire need of improvements in the judicial system to speed it up. There are other repugnant parts of this bill, and mainly the one that really hurts is the fact that you can cut the judicial system's budget back and you don't cut the judge's salaries back. I mean, we would have to pass a statutory change to cut them back, and I don't see it.
Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I wish my distinguished colleague from wherever would do a little research. The reason that and there is a prohibition in the Constitution that prohibits the salaries of judges from being changed during their tenure, and the reason for that goes back 200 years to the time when the courts of the United States were intended to be free from political influence and to render full and fair decisions to people of this country, and it's incorporated in our state constitution. I think it's a good provision. And however, if my distinguished colleague wishes to change it, he should put in a constitutional amendment. Maybe a better look at it.
Well, I don't.
Senator Szymanski?
Briefly, I don't practice before these judges the same as the previous senator does. So obviously, I'm not probably qualified to be judged by the judges. But in this case, I can assure you that it would take a statutory change to roll back the salaries.
Further discussion? Senator Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. President. I did support the amendment up in finance. However, I do plan on voting against the bill. I think that the Finance Committee version is one that at least has some basis for giving the judge some raises, or the judges raises. The good senator from the Mat-Su refers to it as the $100,000 judge bill. Well, the original version would be the $96,996 judge bill. You know, there's one reason it was introduced. Just under $100,000, the same reason that most retail sellers put their price just under whatever the dollar mark is, because it sells better. And that's the only purpose. There's no rational basis for making it $999,000 versus $100,000. It's the Salary Commission's recommendation. They did a lot of research, spent a lot of time, independent people who evaluated it. They came up with a decision. I think we either ought to pass theirs or not pass theirs, but not try and package it so it sells a little bit by being right under $100,000.
Further discussion? Senator Eliason.
Mr. President, I think I'm going to vote for the bill, but I just like to question the Finance Committee. How does this affect the judges who have retired?
Senator Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. President. Any time the judicial retirement system, I'm not an expert by any means on it, but my understanding of it is that any time there is a raise for current judges, that the retirement amount goes up proportionally. I believe they get 75% or thereabouts of whatever the existing salary is for judges. So the retired judges would get, if it's 75, and I believe it is, they would get 75% of whatever the current salary is. So as this goes up, so do the retirement benefits for those judges.
Questions?
Question being, shall the Senate Finance Committee substitute be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote. So the Senate Finance Committee substitute is adopted by a vote of 15 yeas and 4 nays.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 230 Finance by the Finance Committee, enacting the compensation of justices and judges and providing for an effective date.
Are there any amendments?
I have no amendments.
Senator Rudy.
Mr. President, I move the consent that SB 230 be considered in growth, that's the reading, place final passage.
Without objection, Senate Bill 230 is in third reading.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 230 Finance, an act relating to compensation of justices and judges and providing for an effective date.
Is there further discussion? Senator Fisher.
Thank you. I am going to be voting against the bill. I think the economy cannot bear to give people $12,000, $13,000 raises. We have people that aren't even making that much a year, and here we are saying we have fiscal responsibility, and we're giving in 1 year a raise anywhere from, oh, gosh, the small one isn't too bad, $924. That's probably swallowable, but when you get into the $12,000, $13,000 range, I think it's ludicrous. Also, the Salary Commission was not voted by the people. We were. And if we're going to allow the Salary Commission to determine how we pass legislation, then maybe they ought to do this and not us. And I just think the economy right now, it's not the time, and that's what I said on my report from Finance, it's not the time now to give such a large raise to this kind of a person. They're there by choice. Nobody made them be a judge. They go, they run for election. This is the thing they understand when they run for office. But to go, and then also it does apply, Senator from up north said, it does apply to those, or apply to those people that are on retirement. They automatically get carried along, and I just don't think it's fair. We don't have any other person that I'm aware of in state government that their retirement automatically goes on with the increase of pay raises for anybody. I think it's ludicrous.
Would somebody like to explain E-Port, Senator Rohde?
No, but I'll talk about the pay raise. Mr. President, the Alaskan judges haven't had a salary increase since 1985, 5 years. Alaskan judges rank 40th of 43rd states. That's right, 40th of 43rd states. We are way at the bottom. There really aren't many states below us. The compensation package that we have before us was put together by the Compensation Commission. It was an even-handed, fair, reasonable look at comparable salaries, which I think is the way we ought to set salaries, and I would recommend it to the body.
Senator Jones.
I speak to the senator from Kenai's comments. No, people take a job because they want the job, but they don't take the job expecting never to have a raise. And I think it's probably our fault if we're not building a better system to allow for raises each year. Because this is what happens. All of a sudden, we try to catch up, and it results in large raises. And of course, it's never the time to give this large a raise. But again, we're playing catch-up ball. And we're finding ourselves not only doing this with the judges, we're doing this with state employees also. So you know, we need to find a better system. But really, when someone takes a job, they don't expect to stay at base pay for the rest of their lives. They expect to be recognized for the good job they do. I'm going to support the bill.
Senator Fix.
Sir, I think it's only fair to let everybody know that in the draft of the committee substitute for the ethics bill that you have before us, we have also taken the Salary Commission's recommendation on the pay increase for the legislators, and it will be a similar large pay increase, even though the ethics bill, if it passes, takes away a lot of per diem and other kinds of monies. But I just think when this debate goes on that hopefully in a limited amount of time, we will also be voting on an ethics package that will have a similar recommendation in it.
Senator Curtula.
I hope we hold an ethics passage, ethics act that will involve those this year and a retroact so that we're all covered at all times under this act, including for this year.
Further discussion? Senator Ewing.
Mr. President, maybe I don't understand. We're talking about compensation for justices here, not
ethical package and legislative pay increases. I'm a little confused.
Further discussion. Senator Fisher.
My final comment is I get the impression that what we're saying is justice in our society depends upon the salary of the judges. I mean, that's the kind of feeling, as though we're going to get a greater justice system with higher salaries. If that's the case, then we have a pretty sad judicial system.
Further discussion.
Question.
Question being, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 230 Finance pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote, and so committee substitute for Senate Bill 230 Finance passes the Senate by a vote of 14 yeas and 5 nays. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent for the vote on the bill, but consider the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Senator Szymanski.
Yeah, I'd like to reconsideration of Senate Bill 230.
Reconsideration is noted. Madam Secretary.
Committee substitute for House Bill Number 442, Labor and Commerce amended by the Labor and Commerce Committee, enacted relating to the Alaska Tourism Marketing Council and providing for an effective date. Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a Labor and Commerce Senate Committee substitute and do pass. The report was sent by Senator Elias and Chair, concurring Senators Coghill and Rohde. Zero fiscal note. Rules Committee considered the bill and recommends calendar. Report was sent by Senator Sturgiwski, Chair, concurring Senators Rohde, Kurtul, and Eliason. There is a Labor and Commerce Senate CS.
Mr. President, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the Labor and Commerce version of Committee Substitute House Bill 442 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Labor and Commerce Committee Substitute is adopted.
Senate CS for CS for House Bill Number 442, Labor and Commerce, by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act related to Alaska Tourism Marketing Council and providing for an effective date. Hammond Amendment Number 1 by Senator Fakes, page 3, line 5, following AS 4433705B, and this amendment has been distributed.
Senator Fakes.
I would like to move Amendment Number 1, please.
There is objection. Senator Fakes.
Yes, sir. What I'm just trying to do is make it very specific about how much these mailing labels are going to cost. Right now, there are 2,500 actual tourism firms in the state of Alaska and over 2,500 additional restaurants and bars. Historically, there has been than 190 tourism firms that have been able to use these mailing labels, and they've been primarily out of state, the very, very large firms who've had access to them because they've donated to this marketing council. The Alaska voter list of over 2,500 names is available right now to anyone who wishes for 59 cents per thousand on a computer tape from the state, and it resells in the marketplace for $25 per thousand. The Alaska business license list of approximately 70,000 names sells for $1.15 per thousand on computer tapes from the state, and resellers sell that list for $25 per thousand. What I'm asking is for my colleagues to support that the tourism mailing list be sold for $50 per thousand and $30 per thousand when there aren't labels involved. I know that the Marketing Council says they'll make these labels available for $150, but that's not specific anywhere. They had made them available previously for $300 per thousand. No small Alaskan firm has ever been able to pay that kind of money for these labels. That, to me, is a public resource. So to make it consistent with the Alaska voter list and the Alaska business license list, I would ask that this amendment be adopted.
Senator Szymanski.
Thank you. I'm going to oppose the amendment, and the reason I'm going to oppose it is that you can't make a comparison between this list, voter list, or similar types of general data list. The basis of these lists is, as we set up in statute, and there was considerable debate when we set that up in statute, as a revenue production for the private sector and the joint venture marketing system we have in the state of Alaska for tourism. In several hearings which we conducted during the summer, jointly with the House, we had no indication from any of the tourism representatives there, and we had everything from fishing guides to shop owners to very large tourism industry people who ever objected to the price that the labeling was set at. The 150 per thousand currently brings in a significant portion of the private sector's matching funds to the marketing fund, and to lock it into 50 would bring it down and substantially reduce the impact or the ability for the private sector to match the state money. So I, for that reason alone, I see no real basis to lock into statute the figure of 50 and 30 for the computer run.
Senator Fakes.
I guess, sir, I'm looking at the Alaskan company. I'm looking at the 2,500 actual small tourist firms in the state of Alaska, and having them have the opportunity to be the have access to this list. Several years ago, I started really pushing for the marketing or the advertising firms to be in state, and I couldn't imagine the trouble that I had getting the competitive bid process to be for Alaskans to be the marketers and the advertisers for this. It took almost 4 years through the passing of state laws and the procurement code and everything else to get Alaskans to be able to be the beneficiaries, an Alaskan advertising company, to be able to market things like the vacation planner and do the commercials and everything else that we're doing outside. These folks, this marketing council is primarily run by outsiders. They're the big outside tour companies who come in during the summer. They bring their own people up, their own bus drivers, their own waitresses, their own maids and all of that to run their big facilities here, and then they leave again for the winter. All I'm asking is that the small Alaskan tourist company have access to these labels that is a public resource. It belongs to everybody in the state. And $150 is a huge amount of money, and nothing guarantees that they're going to get to have it at $150. There's nothing in statute. It's not even a regulation. It was just a vote of that council that previously had set it at $300. Nobody took advantage of it for $300. But I'm just trying to make it fair for the small Alaskan tour company.
Senator Lyason.
I think it's only fair also to note that we did have a teleconference on this particular bill, and we had a number of sites throughout the state of Alaska, and there's only one firm that protested the cost.
Senator Sturgiluski.
Yes, just very briefly on it. I think that this amendment is counterproductive. It's going to cut by some two-thirds the amount raised. That's based on the difference between the 50 and the 150. And once you get these set figures in statute, it's very difficult to change. Frankly, there's a whole lot of Alaskan businesses that benefit by the generic advertising that we do. So certainly we've got to bring the tourists here in the first place. So I am in opposition to this amendment.
Karen Camp.
Thank you, Mr. President. To me, we're debating an issue that's been debated on the federal level many times called price fixing. And it's, as far as I'm concerned, if we're going to support the group that we've set up through statute, we need to allow them the means they need in which to make the funds for the matching money. So I'll be opposing the amendment.
Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm trying to make up my mind on this amendment, and I just find it interesting that this bill has now gone through the House and now through the Senate, and as I recall from what I've heard today on the floor, there's only one person that's objected to it. I mean, why wouldn't that have come up earlier if it's really impacting those small Alaska businesses out there, those tourist companies and everybody else? Here this bill has gone through the process. It's a House bill, and it's now before us, and yet this is the first time we've heard about it. So I just wonder why it's taken so long for them to wake up to this reality of a problem out there.
Senator Szymanski.
Well, I'll try to clarify that it's not the lower 48 group. The association that's referenced in statute, Qualified Trade Association, Alaska Visitors Association, not the California Visitors Association, not the Seattle Visitors Association, but the Alaska Visitors Association. And the Alaska Visitors Association is made up of many hundred of those small operators, and many of those people are participating. And a guide that wants to obtain a selected list for his single lodge can get that list at the rate of 150 per thousand, and that list can be refined right down to the point of being attorneys in the West Coast seeking to come to Alaska, and they can make that mailing. and it's a good system. It's a system that's been working in the past, and I see no reason to try to lock it in at this arbitrary figure.
Senator Fakes.
Thank you. My information is that the system hasn't worked in the past, that only the big boys get the list. The small people can't afford to get the list. A $300 per thousand is an enormous amount of money. And my information, it could be wrong, but my information is that no one has gotten that list besides the large tour companies. $150 per thousand is a lot better. I agree with you. But it's not in statute anyway. They don't have to do that. I mean, this is an independent board run by the large tour companies made up of, you get on that board by how much money you contribute. I mean, it's not selected. The governor doesn't pick them. I mean, it's who contributes, who gets on this board. So, I mean, it's a special interest board, and that's fine. I mean, they are bringing tours to Alaska, but let's not kid ourselves. Are they using Alaskans? Are they hiring Alaskan bus drivers? Are they using Alaskan waitresses? Are they using Alaskan bed makers? Many of them are not. It's the Alaskan companies that are based here that are using Alaskan employees. All I'm trying to do is just make it fair for the small Alaskan company to get this list. And I mean, and I don't want to belabor this. If it's voted down, it's voted down. But I just think that it's being controlled by a small group of people for their own particular businesses, and that's fine. I don't begrudge them that, but I think everyone should have an opportunity to buy the list at double what the other lists in the state are being sold for. Again, the voter list goes for 59 cents a thousand. The Alaska business license list goes for $1.15.
Question. Fisher.
I had checked to see about how many names are on this list. If you took the total list, I think it's around 350,000 names. That would be cheap if somebody wanted all 350,000, give it to them for 50,000. But what I found in the labeling business is when you get into, we want a certain age group, a certain occupation, maybe a certain sex, certain, geographic area, that's where it gets expensive. And I think that if you had a label and it cost you $350 for 1,000, but you could target specifically just what you're after, that's probably a pretty good deal. It's when you go for the big ones, the 350,000, if you want a mailing like that, which means everybody that responded, I guess, to the any kind of inquiry the state had out, then it would be too expensive.
Further discussion? The question being, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote, and so amendment number one fails by a vote of 5 yeas and 14 nays. Are there any other amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I move to ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill, or rather House Bill 442 be considered in gross advance third reading, place for final passage.
Without objection, House Bill 442 is in third reading.
Senate CS for House Bill number 442, Labor and Commerce, enact relating to Alaska Tourism Marketing Council and providing for an effective date.
Is there further discussion?
Question.
Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. President. A lot of the debate on this bill and a lot of the discussion on this bill has dealt with its fiscal impact on the Tourism Marketing Council, and yet it has zero fiscal notes and apparently never went to the Finance Committee. Is that correct?
Senator Yuling.
That's
correct, Senator Halford.
I believe that this bill does, in fact, affect the fiscal cost and operation, and I believe that that's in violation of the rules not to have gone through finance.
Further discussion?
Question.
Question being, shall Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 442, Labor and Commerce, pass to Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Senator Curtula wishes to change his vote. Senator Fisher wishes to change his vote. The roll call is void. The question being, shall Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 442, Labor and Commerce, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote. So Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 442, Labor and Commerce, fails by a vote of 16 yeas and 3 nays. Passes by a vote of 16 yeas and 3 nays. Wouldn't let me get away with that one. Senator Rohde. Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. There is no citation calendar today. That brings us down to unfinished business. Is there unfinished business to come before the Senate today? Senator will stand at ease. Back to order. We're under unfinished business. Senator Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused from the call, not subject to call, tomorrow in order to go up on the early flight. I was scheduled to go up at 10:30. However, there is a panel on subsistence before the AFN convention at 10 o'clock, which both Senator Zaroff and I would miss if we took the 10:30 flight. We would like to be present at that, so I would like to be excused so I could take the early flight.
Without objection. Senator Fakes. Senator Halford.
Object.
Senator Halford objects to the excuse.
Just for a point of information, does that mean that we are not using written requests anymore?
In this particular case, Senator, the written request was waived. Senator Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would also like to place that same motion as Senator Binkley being excused tomorrow.
As I understand it, the difference is you were going to go in a 10:30 plane anyway, you're just going a little earlier.
Yes, Mr. President.
Is there any objection?
How many people will be on the floor tomorrow then, Senator Kelly, at 8 o'clock in the morning?
Well, we anticipate, as of this time, 17 people on the floor of the Senate tomorrow. Without objection, Senator Jaroff's excuse. Senator Fakes.
Senator Jaroff, reconsideration of House Bill 442,
please. Reconsideration is noted. Senator Halford.
President, I'm going to ask unanimous consent I be excused on Wednesday the 11th on personal business.
You're gone, Senator. Senator Fisher.
Senator, I'd be excused from a call to House Thursday and Friday.
Senator, you're previously excused for Friday and Thursday both.
Oh, I thought I had to ask. I didn't ask before.
Okay. No, we've already had a letter plus. Without objection, Senator Fisher is excused Thursday and Friday.
Moving to ask unanimous consent that SCS Committee Substitute House Joint Resolution 85 State Affairs be taken up at this time for reconsideration. That's the baseball.
Got a vote. Yeah, you missed it, Arlo, so I saved it for you for today.
Senate CS for CS for House Joint Resolution number 85 State Affairs. Going to baseball between teams from Pacific Rim Nations before the Senate on reconsideration.
Is there any discussion? Question being, shall Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 85 State Affairs pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote. And so Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 85 State Affairs passed the Senate by a vote of 18 yeas and no nays. Senator Curtula.
Thank you. Notice my intent to reconsider my vote on Senate Bill 119 next day.
Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I would move that we rescind our action in adopting House Bill 74.
Senator will stand at ease. There is a call in the Senate. Will the Senate please stand at ease? Senator Szymanski.
Yes.
Senator Szymanski, you were going to remove your call of the Senate. The motion will be removed. The bill will remain in the Secretary's hands. We will return at 5 o'clock this afternoon and discuss this whole issue.
With that, I remove my call.
The call is removed. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I would remove my motion and request the Secretary have the bill remain on her desk for 5 o'clock session.
That will be done. Senator Duncan.
I move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused from the call of the Senate beginning at 5 o'clock this afternoon.
There is an objection to that. We'll simply stand at ease.
understand that the 5 o'clock session is for the primary purpose of moving bills, which would make sense at the end of the legislative session. However, I also understand this motion will come back up, so anybody who's not here, there'll be a call and we'll have to come back. Might I suggest we just take a straw poll to see how many are interested in rescinding action, and if there's not enough, we can vote now and get it over with. Why doesn't somebody count votes?
Who is sensing?
Yeah. Oh, I guess what I'm asking is why doesn't those who are interested in rescinding and those who are against it count the votes and see if the votes are there? I'm not sure they're even there. It's also ridiculous, Mr. President. I remove my motion.
Motion to be excused from call is removed. Now, are there any further announcements of committee meetings? Senator Jones?
Mr. President, Transportation Committee will meet this afternoon at 1:30 in the Bell's Room. The agenda is posted.
Senator Farenkamp.
Thank you, Mr. President. Resources Committee will be meeting at 1 o'clock today to try to continue or finish two bills that we started yesterday from 1 to 1:30 in the Budget Room.
Senator Coghill.
Mr. President, just to remind the Senate that tonight at 5 to 7, while the Healy Cogeneration Project providers are having a reception at Kent Dawson's office, I guess that'll be 5 or right after the session.
Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, today at 1:15 p.m. In the Senate Finance Committee room, Dr. John Goodman of the National Center for Policy Analysis will be available to interested legislators and staff to discuss the question of health care costs with anyone who's interested.
Senator Pierce.
We have an oil and gas committee meeting this afternoon at 5:30 in Senate Finance or upon adjournment, whichever comes first.
Senator Fakes.
Committee today, two bills up. Senate Bill 252, hopefully we'll dispose of that bill, an act exempting amounts held in the judicial retirement system from execution. Senate Bill 415, an act relating to the conduct of legislators and legislative employees, former legislators and legislative employees, and to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics. I passed out today the current version and the version of the committee substitute that the committee will be looking at today. We will have a two-hour teleconference with Michael Josephson and Senator Porchot. We have a letter of intent that was also passed out that goes with the bills. You all have this. I am hoping for judiciary action today.
Further announcements? Senator will stand. Senator Szymanski.
Yes, can we move back to unfinished business?
Without objection, unfinished business. Senator Szymanski.
Yes, I move and ask unanimous consent the 5-day rule be waived on House Bill 300. Title related to municipal ownership of public utility stock, a companion bill, Senate Bill 532, has been previously announced for a hearing today, and I'd like to take up 300 in its place.
Without objection, Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Finance waive Senate Bill 483 at your request of licensing of golf carts.
That bill had a $1,000 positive fiscal note. Without objection, that bill is waived from the Finance Committee. Senator Halford?
That's not the way the rule reads.
Senator Halford, it was referred to the Finance Committee. And he just waived the referral.
That is in violation of the rules.
Without objection. Well, there is objection. Senator Coghill.
The rules is you have to have one committee referral.
Senator Duncan.
Of course, it has had one committee referral. The Senate Transportation Committee reported out. It's got a $1,000 positive fiscal note. You referred it to Finance Committee, which is, according to the rules, the Finance Committee waived it instead of holding a hearing, so it's had its referral.
Further unfinished business. Further announcements. Special orders. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I move the Senate stand at recess until 5 o'clock today.
The Senate stands recessed until 5. Messages from the Governor.
Message dated April 10th. Dear Mr. President, in accordance with AS 3905080 and Article 3, Section 25 and 26 of the Alaska Constitution, I submit the following names for legislative confirmation of appointment to the position noted. State Medical Board, Ray Shields.
Labor and Commerce.
Board of Nursing, Mary Storing, Louise Dean.
Labor and Commerce.
State Physical Therapy Board and Occupational Therapy Board, Pauline Bennett Gannon.
Labor and Commerce.
Alaska Public Offices Commission.
name the name.
Excuse me, Denton Pearson.
State Affairs, and I would remind Committee Chairman that we're looking at a tentative confirmation session on Wednesday, May 2nd. So if you would get your recommendations in by then, please.
Those are all the messages from the Governor, Mr. President.
Messages from the House?
The House has passed Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 19, financed by the Finance Committee, an act related to citizen review panels for certain children in state custody, court review of cases relating to children, establishing the citizens review panel for permanency planning and providing for an effective date.
Judiciary.
Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 398, Hess, by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, an act providing authority for the Department of Education to adjust a school district state foundation aid in a fiscal year to correct for previous underpayments relating to the number of allowable total elementary and secondary instructional units and determining state foundation aid for a school district and providing for an effective date.
Hess and Finance.
Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 432, Resources, by the Resources Committee, an act prohibiting finfish farming and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce Resources.
This bill is available for cross-sponsorship. Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 571, Hess, by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, an act requiring notice to obligators about obligations regarding support.
Hess Committee Finance.
Those are all the messages from the House today, Mr. President.
Senator Rohde, would you move us back to introduction of Senate resolutions, please?
Mr. President, I move the unanimous consent that we refer to the introduction of Senate resolutions.
Madam Secretary.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 55 by the Rules Committee, establishing a joint committee on the last Legislative Ethics Act of 1990.
Senator Rohde. Senate, please stand at ease. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we take up as a special order of business Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 55.
Without objection, Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 55 is in front of the Senate. Is there any discussion? Madam Secretary.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 55, establishing a joint committee on the Alaska Legislative Ethics Act of 1990.
Does everybody have a copy of the resolution in front of them? Senate will stand at ease. Back to order. We have in front of us Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 55. Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think this is probably a good idea, but I wanted to ask just a couple questions if I could. Just one question primarily. On the timing, it indicates that this committee, the Joint Committee, will consider the bill until May 2nd, 1990, and report back their recommendations. That leaves us, I think, 6 days or 5 days in the legislative session. I'm assuming when that comes back from a joint committee, it then has to go before a standing committee in this body, which would probably be the Senate Finance Committee, then to the floor and back to the other body, and or vice versa. Does that give us enough time in your mind to do this? I'm just asking the timing question.
Senator Porchel.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm not intimately familiar with the particular date picked here, but just in terms of the mechanics, I would certainly view this as the last day, and that there would be every effort made to try to resolve these problems in advance of May 2nd, because I concur with the Senator from Juneau that that does not leave very much time to bring back to each body. And yes, the assumption would be that it would go through another standing committee, and that is obviously very tight. So it's just probably the best last day for this process to take place.
There is currently and will be a referral to the Senate Finance Committee when that bill is received back. Senator Duncan.
Yeah, and I understand, I appreciate that, and I'm not trying to cause difficulty here, but my concern is that there will be three members from each body working on this, and is it the intent then that that's kind of cast in stone, or will there be further debate and discussion in the committee process? I'm just concerned that we're tying ourselves too tight of a time frame here. If it could come out sooner, maybe it should, because it appears to me that probably 17 other members of this body and 37 members of the other body will want to participate in some kind of committee process on it.
Senator Porchel.
Thank you, Mr. President. Of course, that really is the intention of trying to do this, is to be able to have a more time in a very specific forum to do that kind of work and to ask those kind of questions. Frankly, because of the length of the way we... the point in the session that we now find ourselves in, We need, I think, a committee and some people on both the House and the Senate side to put in several days of effort on this project, and the hope is to try to resolve some of the problems that undoubtedly will or would otherwise arise between the House and the Senate versions. Yes, there needs to be some hearings and some work done on the bill, and hopefully this will provide the forum more so than perhaps the committee process that we ordinarily would have had.
Senator Jones.
Just wondering if the Transportation Committee will have a chance to look at the bill before it goes on, when it comes back.
We'll take that into consideration, Senator. Yeah. Further discussion. Question being, shall Senate Concurrent Resolution 55 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote. So Senate Concurrent Resolution 55 passes the Senate by a vote of 17 yeas and 2 nays. Would the Senate, Senator Rohde, would you return us to unfinished business, please?
Business.
Without objection, return to unfinished business. Under unfinished business, I should explain what happened on Senator Adams's excuse today. He did, in fact, write a letter to the body on March 17th. I did receive the letter. I did sign the TR at that time. He did request today and tomorrow to be excused. The letter was not transmitted to the Secretary of Senate's office. So Senator Adams is shown as not excused. He did write the letter. However, that does not dismiss the fact that he is not excused, and if it becomes an issue this evening, then we will have to get Senator Adams back here. Senator Halford.
I'll wait.
Will the Senate please stand at ease? For Senator Rohde. Well, the Senate appreciates.
Understood what I was saying, and what I said is where you do the work is you do it in the process, and if we don't concur with what the other body does, you do it in the conference committee. That's how you resolve the differences. We don't tie down an operating budget so tight that the other body can't make a change. Neither do they. Quite honestly, probably one of the worst rules we ever put through this legislature was where you could tie titles down so tight that you thwart the legislative process.
Further discussion. Question being, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote, and so amendment number one has been adopted by a vote of 13 yeas and 6 nays.
Amendment number two by Senator Halford. Page 2, line 7, this has been distributed.
Senator Halford.
I move amendment number two.
There is objection, Senator Halford.
Amendment number two deletes Section 7, which provides $3.8 million into an escrow account, which essentially would sit there and do nothing to guarantee or theoretically guarantee a construction project. I don't believe that that is an appropriate expenditure. I do support the previous section, which deals with the actual upgrade of the utility.